Welcome along again, everyone, and today we are in for an absolute treat. On today's episode of Know Your Enemy, we have the wonderful Perry DeWitt. Perry is a competitor in America. She's competed on the international team for many years with many dogs, and this year was no different. I know that at the time of this recording, this wasn't the case, but I already know that she's won on for next year's international competitions again, and this time with both her dogs. I really enjoyed the conversation with Perry, getting to know her a little bit more, and I hope you do too. It's at this point, it's probably worth mentioning that we are coming to the end of this series of the podcast. And before the next series starts, I wanted to let you guys know about the opportunity of getting involved with regards to sponsoring the podcast. If you, or if you know of anyone who you think might be interested in doing so, it'd be great to hear from them. Tell them to get in touch with me. You can either find me as Karma Fitness Wales on Facebook, or Chris Curton. Thank you, everyone. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Okay, welcome along again to another episode of Know Your Enemy. And today we have Perry DeWitt on the podcast. Is that how you say your name, Perry?
That is.
Oh, good. I'm glad I haven't messed that up so soon on in the conversation. So do you want to say hello to everyone?
Hello, everybody. I'm super excited to be here. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Firstly, thank you so much for giving us some of your time today to be on here. I know I appreciate it, and I'm sure that everyone who is listening will by the end. So we know who you are, we know what your name is, but to yourself, who do you see yourself as today?
Who do I see myself as? A dog trainer, I think, first and foremost. An agility competitor, a competitor, an athlete. I've been an athlete my whole life. But I think at the core, I'm really a dog lover and a dog trainer. And I think that's probably what I define myself most as. And agility kind of comes after that.
So you, before agility, were you a trainer or were you a trainer after agility?
I was a trainer before agility. I did in-home behavior consults and pet dog training for like 10 years before I started teaching agility full time. And before that, even in high school and in college, I worked at a daycare, and then I worked at a dog training boarding place. And so I've only ever done dog training professionally, and that kind of morphed into now I do agility teaching full time.
That's quite a long part of your life. You've kind of been in and around the dog world. Was there anything that particularly pushed you towards that, or did you just find yourself kind of going that way?
I think my whole entire life I've been like a dog obsessed person, which is kind of funny, but as a kid I was like super into dogs. My parents thankfully were like willing to, they didn't get me a dog myself until I was in high school, but we always had dogs. I was lucky enough to have a pretty nice border collie even in elementary school that I like trained agility in the backyard and was just always obsessed with dogs. Like had the dog encyclopedia of breeds and was like looking at that in fifth grade instead of paying attention in school. And I did that. I was always into dogs, and then I was also an athlete, so I played soccer in high school and I played lacrosse through college at a Division I level, and so I was very competitive and into sports and then also equally into dogs. And so once I graduated from college, I kind of was like, all right, I'm done with lacrosse, because you can't really continue to that with women's lacrosse at a professional level. And I was like, all right, now it's going to be agility. And then I went out and bought a border collie, and that's kind of how it started.
So we'll put a pin in the competition side of things, but I definitely want to get back to that. With regards to when you were first into your dogs, did you feel that that was always going to be kind of where you'd end up professionally, or was that again something that came later on?
I think I always knew it. I mean, when I was a little kid, I always was like, I'm going to be a vet when I grow up. Cause I think that's what most animal lover, kids say. And then I kind of like hemmed and hawed maybe about teaching when I was like, I don't know, in high school and early college. And then I was like, who am I kidding? I'm going to train dogs. And so I just kind of, once I was like, obviously once I realized I could make that a career, I didn't really look back on it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, was it in the early days then? Let's talk about when you first kind of got into agility. Were there any people who strongly influenced you as a trainer or as a competitor, really?
Let's see. In the very my early times. I think my first big influence was One Mind Dogs. My kind of core group of friends really got into that, and they helped me understand agility from the dog's perspective. And so Shauna Dose was, I think, my mentor for the most part in the beginning, and she kind of got me into being able to train with some of the some of those trainers and kind of sharing what she knew. So in the early, that was kind of like during that, when they first came on the scene, that was when I was first getting into it. I had been doing agility for, I think, 3 years with my first border collie. And then I got Verb, who became my first successful dog, right when that was happening. So I kind of was able to learn agility from the dog's perspective, which I was already kind of into anyway, because I was into training and I was into understanding how they're thinking and how are they perceiving things. And so that helped me, I think, quickly understand the nature of the dog and agility, not necessarily like the training part of it, but that really kind of expedited my ability to understand handling more than any of the more intricate stuff. But, or not that that's not intricate, but more than the training side of it. So I'd say they were my first kind of big influence in agility.
Yeah, that makes sense. And with regards to kind of help that you had in the beginning, because I think there's a lot of people who maybe are aspiring to be, you know, improve on the level that they're competing at themselves and maybe looking for, and I don't want to say a quick fix, because I don't think there are any real quick fixes, but is there any bits of advice that you were given early or later that you wish you'd been given earlier so that you would have kind of expedited the progress and made it a lot quicker?
Truthfully, I don't mean, not to be like, oh, it was quick. I feel like it kind of was expedited for me, I think, because of the dog training side that I had and the like years of athletic training that I had. So like agility, this is kind of going off what you asked, but agility was like the physical maneuvers of like front crossing and being connected at the same time as going somewhere was hard for me initially. I think the way it is for everybody, but I had like years of team defense on a lacrosse field where you're like learning how to see the person and see the ball at the same time. And that was so hard for me when I first learned it in high school. I was horrible at it. Like I was like a space cadet, couldn't figure it out. And then once it clicked, I was able to do it. And I think had I not had that, I don't know that I could do it. I think that's like the only reason I can do it successfully. But I think, I don't know, what would I say to someone to expedite? I think ultimately you got to find someone that you feel comfortable with, that you can ask questions, that you don't feel like afraid to try things with. I think I feel in the beginning, I mean, I found people that helped me quickly, but in the very beginning, I feel like I had people that were misunderstanding me, that maybe weren't the best teachers for me. That doesn't mean they're not great teachers for someone else, but I think if you find someone that makes you comfortable and that you feel you can ask and you can be kind of uninhibited, I think that's probably the best way to improve quickly. Because if you're feeling stressed or nervous, I feel like that's the downfall to being able to improve. And I feel like I try super hard with my students to not, if I feel that they're stressed, I try to help them to not feel stressed so that they're actually able to function and learn. Because I think at the beginning, at least for me, it was like everything is, it's all eyes on you sport. So it's really stressful. And even in classes and stuff like that, I think if you're not feeling comfortable, you're not going to be able to learn at your best, at least not at your best.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, when you are learning anything, even when you have learned it and you feel like you're competing at the top level, which you are, there's always going to be times that you're not good at something when you want to teach a new skill, and you need to be comfortable being bad because that's the way to get better. And I think a lot of people just kind of not assume that you just have a skill, because obviously everyone intrinsically knows you need to go away and work on it to get it. But yeah, I think some people can be very hard on themselves with regards to how quickly they expect to be good at something, when in the reality, it just takes lots of work, doesn't it?
It does take, it takes a lot of work, and it just takes a lot of try and fail. You have to be okay with failing. And I think maybe that's part of having been like in sports, like you try, you fail, you try, you fail, you get up, you try again, you get up, you try again. And when I was first learning agility, there's some videos of me on the internet, like literally falling over because I'm trying to figure out how to, and this is the hardest thing, how to figure out where I am in the space with staying connected to the dog. And I ran into so many obstacles, and I literally fell down so many times until, and now I really don't fall that often, but it was like you have to be able to laugh at yourself for failing. You have to be able to know it's part of the process. And yeah, I mean, it can be frustrating to not be where you want to be right away, but you just the progress, as long as it's upward. I mean, I think you just have to accept that it takes as long as it takes, and to keep going, you'll get there.
Yeah, I mean, you got we I said I'd put a pin in it, but I think now's a good time to come back to it, is the competitive aspect of your history, I guess, in sports. And like for myself as well, coming from other sports at a good level and coming into agility, I mean, obviously I want your views on it, but for me, I was quite surprised how unprofessional the way it was structured with regards to training was. And I could just see that there were lots of different aspects that could be fine-tuned to make things a bit better. What do you think about that? And then secondly, how much of your progress do you put down to the fact that you were competitive in another sport beforehand? Because again, in my opinion, having the experience of competition at a high level helps you in agility as well. But more than that, being coached in another sport helps you be more coachable. For me, I was coached in triathlon, and every time that I went into a triathlon session, whether it be run, swim, bike, I knew from my coach exactly what I was going to work on. I knew exactly how the session was going to be structured. I knew all the stimuluses that we were aiming for, all these types of things. And then you come into agility, and like my experience anyway, initially at least, it wasn't like that. And I just think that there's a big gap between where agility is headed and some of the processes that some people are implementing to get there. I'm not talking about yours because I don't know yours, but I'm just talking in general. Do you feel that your competitive background has benefited you with regards to structuring of your training and how you progress?
I do think I see what you're, I know what you're saying about how it's kind of like a little bit haphazard. At least it was. I mean, I think it's gotten, I think there's a lot more streamlined approaches to teaching agility now. I think when I started, I started, I don't remember, 13 years ago or something. So it's not short, not super long. There's people that have been doing it a lot longer. I think that part of it has changed so much, even in that time frame. There's so many more, like, sort of, I don't even know if that's true, but at least in my experience, not systems or necessarily, but paths that you can follow, like
Yeah, I
online
know what you
classes
mean.
that you can take. And if you kind of commit to a certain trainer that you like, you can kind of get those steps that you're used to getting as an athlete, where it's like, okay, we're going to start with this footwork drill that's going to lead to this, it's going to lead to that, that's going to lead to ultimately being able to perform this sport or this. So I did feel like that was a little bit missing for me when I started. I was kind of like, okay, well, I trained the weaves and I trained the contacts, and I can't do a front cross because I don't even know, like, up from down or left from right. And it would have been really helpful for me to have someone really explain those things. And I do think that exists now, and I'm sure it did then too. I just had to find it, at least in a way that worked for me. But I think for me, it's so hard to know, because like, how much has being an athlete my whole life helped me? But I feel like it's a lot. I feel like I'm super nervous as a competitor. Like, I'm even now, like, I mean, there's some times at local trials where I'm not nervous, but even that, I think my heart rate is always up, even if it's just like something that really doesn't matter that much. And if it's a big event, I'm like completely like upregulated. My heart is racing. Like, I don't even know how I do it. But I think because of that part of my nature, if I hadn't competed for my whole life, it would be a much bigger struggle for me to be able to cope with all that. I mean, I like yeah I mean, being coached in, like, I in high school I had a coach who, my lacrosse coach was a wrestler, a man who was a wrestler, who was he was he did he was very successful at coaching our team. Like, our girls lacrosse in high school was very very successful for year after year after year. So he's a very overall good coach, but it wasn't the best coach for me. It was like a little bit of the, like, no, I don't want to say he's yelling, but like, you can, like, come on, pick it up, you know, you're not trying, or you're not doing your best. And I was like, just always scared and trying, like being afraid of failing and like being afraid of getting yelled at. And I kind of had to work through that and learn how to, work around that. And in college, it's kind of the same thing. I think I must have a nature that looks like I'm not trying, but it really, it's because I'm scared. So I'm like, well, I'm not doing it because I don't want to mess it up. And finally, with my My college coach, which lacrosse basically was what I went to college for. Like I did study, but I don't remember it. Like I didn't learn anything. I learned how to be a competitor, and I learned how to stand up for myself and say, "Hey, this doesn't work for me. Like if you feel like I'm not trying and you're yelling at me, it's going to make me want to try less." And then that coach thankfully listened to me and changed her approach to coaching me, and then I was able to actually do so much better, and I made like the all conference team that year, and it was like a huge change in my I don't know, like just in how I was able to perform because of a change in coaching. And I think for me, just going through that, that's made me a better competitor and more resilient and more like I've been up through all those ups and downs. But I think also as a teacher, it's helped me a lot to understand like not everybody's coached the same way, not everybody responds to the same thing. And just because you feel like you want to shake somebody doesn't mean you should, because they're probably really just stressed and they're not, they need you to kind of break something down in a different way that they can understand or whatever. I think I'm deviating off the initial question though of how it's
Well,
helped.
I get what you're saying. It's just the fact that like every coach needs they need to understand that maybe their way of coaching might need to change per person rather than having it the same. But ultimately, coaching is coaching. And I do genuinely believe that like backgrounds in whatever you have done has made a difference, because I just think that if you have been coached, you are likely to be able to be coached easier. Because I'm sure you've got some people, and like you don't need to mention names, where you can tell them the same thing 50 times and they're going to do it wrong 50 times because they haven't got that body awareness and they haven't got the ability to be coached. So I do think it's probably played a bigger part than you realize.
I think I think that's I'm sure it has. I think you're right. It's like being able to receive feedback, make your body do the thing, and also like know how to respond to a coach. I mean, not talk back, and even if you don't totally agree with what they're saying, just give it a try, and then you can decide later if it's something that you're gonna stick to or not. Because I think a lot of people that haven't been through that are hard to teach too, but at least I have been through it to recognize kind of what it is and
Yeah, for sure.
that type of thing.
It was quite interesting you kind of touched on the side of nerves pre-competition. Now, we don't know each other really well, but we've had a few chats when we were at the WAOs and that kind of stuff. I didn't come to the EOs this year, so I didn't see you there. But to me, you didn't seem nervous at all, so you hid it very well. You seem very composed when we were chatting anyway, so well, good work on that side of things. But going into that side of things then, how much work do you do on kind of mental management skills, or just being able to control the nerves before a competition? Because again, as a competitor, I'm sure you're aware that you can have all the best training in the world, all the best prep, you can be totally ready to do it, but then if you stand on the line and you fall apart, doesn't really matter. You need to be able to keep it together, which you certainly can do. So you're able to manage your nerves. So what do you feel has helped you do that?
I think ultimately the biggest thing that's helped me is like I have a visualization like protocol that I follow really, really strictly if it's something I care about. That's made the biggest difference for me. Like and when I first started actually sort of a funny story, but my very first international run was EO team standard with Verb. I think it was in 2000, I think it was 2017. And he didn't have a clean run, but ultimately I thought he did. This is also deviating, but this is just a funny story. He was on course and he had very reliable contacts. He had a stop dog walk, stop teeter, and a really good A-frame. He hardly ever missed them. And I walked out of the ring and someone was like, "Ooh, it's too bad about that up dog walk." And I was like, "Oh, too bad. Okay, whatever." I still kept stayed on course. And then I kept walking. Do, do, do. "Oh, it's too bad about that teeter call." Like, "What? He got called in the teeter?" "Yeah, I think he got called in the up." "Oh my God, he got called in the up teeter too." "Do, do, 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 do." "Oh, it's too bad about that teeter." I'm like, "Yeah, he missed the up." "No, he missed the down." "What?" "Okay, he got called on the up and the down on the teeter and missed the up dog walk." Anyway, long story short, I was so nervous. I was hardly functional. Like it was like completely like I didn't feel like I was in my body at all. And I just my visualization protocol is just to visualize from my perspective doing the run, and I try to make myself do it in real time. So it takes a lot of time. It takes whatever 30 to 40 seconds to actually do it properly. And I do I forget, what do you call it? The clear round training, like when someone makes you go back to one if you have a fault. I do it in my head. So if I have a tiny blip of what's next or where am I going to be or where am I going to be looking or what's going to happen here, I make myself go back to one and I go through it same speed again
I like that.
until I can do it over and over without any question at all. So I feel like if I get so nervous that I'm not functional, I feel like I've already done it. And then assuming the plan is good, I just do it. It's like autopilot. It's kind of weird because a couple times it has happened where I come off and I'm like, I really don't even know what happened. And it's like, it was a great run. It was clean, whatever.
That's like going into the flow state, as they say. You kind of did it without thinking.
And I think because I get so nervous, I have to do that. Or it's not as bad as it used to be, but if I don't do that, like I could be one of those people that just like falls down and is completely non-functional. That's how it feels. Because I have that that type of personality where like one time I went to give a speech, which I don't really do. Like I was like at some out of that school and I was doing it with my old business partner. And I went up and I was standing there and I was like, uh-oh, I can't speak. Like I don't know my name. And my partner was like, and I'm taking over. And I was like, oh my God. So that can happen to me where it's like non-functional because of nerves. But thankfully when it's something like athletic, I think I can revert a little bit more easily. But that's the main thing I do. I mean, that like I said, if as long as the plan is good and I've not missed something, like you know, sometimes you misread a line or something like that, then I tend to be okay. And so that's kind of the more nervous I am, the more I force myself to do that.
I like it. I
And
like the going
also,
back to one thing. That's really cool. I like that if you haven't got it enough in your brain that you can't get through it first time, then you need to start again. I really like that. That's a good tip for
yeah,
someone.
it's good because I feel like it's those teeny little like, okay, the dog went in the tunnel and then okay, now I remember what's next. It's too late with a dog that's going that fast. I also have done lots of therapy on like I didn't need therapy in the beginning of my competition career because I was just like everything was new, everything was is exciting. If you were successful, it was a huge win. And then for me, it started to be like once I had you know a couple of big wins or whatever or successes from, it got harder and harder to fail, and it was like failure then became like it used to be like failing was part of the process, and then it was like not winning started to feel bad. Not that I was always winning, but you know what I mean. Not being not doing as best I could. And so I had to work a little bit on that. I'm still working on that with a therapist online, and that has helped me a lot actually to just be able to continue to enjoy the sport and like let go of that competitive aspect because I am super competitive, and I don't know if that's nature or growing up between two brothers, or something else, but
Maybe a little bit of
that has
both.
been, that has been a hard thing for me to kind of work through, but it's getting better.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, you mean you're obviously competing at a good level, so whatever you're doing is working. I guess just keep doing what's working. You need to change it. So you said that you've been in agility for a fair while now, and I'm sure that you'll agree the last, I don't want to say a time limit, but recently I would say agility has changed quite rapidly. Might be different in the US. I know you've got different federations, would you call it, that you run under. But where do you see agility going in the next few years, and how will it affect us as trainers and as handlers?
In the US, I feel like our agility is kind of dividing in a good way because we have, like you said, we have so many different styles and different venues and things like that. And there's really like that we're trying super hard not to have like a battle between the different venues. Like we want to do the international style and the big spaces and the big courses, but we have a huge pool of people that want to do what is our AKC style, which is smaller spaces and less running for the handler. And there, it's not wrong to want to do either one or the other, but it is a little bit wrong to have us all competing together. Like we feel like there should be a little bit of a almost like a professional track and a hobbyist track. And it kind of is happening here. We've gotten our ISC program, which is our international style courses, really going. And so people that are interested in trying that have a place to go now. And we don't even need to, we have options for qualifying for our tryouts and stuff like that through those courses. So we're not having to run the smaller spaces unless we want to. And that's still there for the people that want that. 'Cause like it's fine if that's what you want to do. And we a little bit dabble in both, and our dogs are kind of schooled a little bit in both. And we, So I think here, at least, it's kind of going that way where there's different tracks that you can go into. I think overall, I really don't know where it's going. I feel like the current trend of like lots of big spaces and more running required for the handler. I mean, I enjoyed that. I don't know. I can't see it. I mean, I'm interested to see how judges influence how much more change and how much more they can push the handler and how much more they can push the dogs. I feel like there has to be a limit to that at some point, but I don't know what that is. So I don't know if it'll hit the limit and then kind of go back or just kind of, I don't know, stay how it is now where it's, you know, you still get a little bit of both from depending on what judges you get.
And the judges do massively influence it as well, obviously, because it's their courses that we end up running ultimately. So, I mean, yeah. What judges are there that you really look out for and really enjoy the challenges that they set?
Let's see. I think right now I am challenged by Alex Beadle, Jan, Tomas, the ones that are really pushing you to do something complicated at the same time as running and staying connected and staying ahead. Those are the ones that I feel like if I can do it, I feel super proud because it's like, it's not something that I feel like I can do in my sleep. I have to focus. I have to be at my best athletically. I have to be at my best, like in connection with my dog. And so I think those are the ones that are pushing me and challenging me the most right now. Though that's those, not that they're all the same style, but
I know
the ones that are, yeah, complex tricks at high speeds, requiring, you know, my best and the dog's best together. Those are the ones that I find super fun right now.
So it wasn't so long ago that you guys came back from the EOs, and from my point of view as a spectator this year, you guys did, would you say, better than ever before regarding the results you're getting and like your podium placings?
Yeah. Do you mean you guys as in me and my dogs or me and Jess?
both really. Yeah. I mean, it all falls kind of thing. And my question more is what you put that down to. I would say that agility in America is moving forward, certainly. So what do you put it down to?
Oh, you guys in the US. Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing is that we've gotten those ISC courses going and we are actually able to compete on that style of course now, where before we really couldn't. It was like we would be literally doing pinwheels and little tiny serpentines and then let's go to EOs and like for the first time ever try to compete on one of these courses. And now we actually get to compete on them all the time. I think for me and Jess, especially because for anyone who doesn't know, my partner, Jessica Zhu, she competes at the same level. And so ultimately we compete against each other every weekend, which is good and bad at the same time. But it has pushed us so much to improve because we're both super freaking competitive. And like I said, that has its definite perks because we are never ever complacent. We just, even at the local stuff that doesn't, like even at the little, like when we do the AKC trials and stuff like that, I wouldn't say we're gunning for each other, but we both want to win and we're both always pushing because of that. And so we've grown so much so quickly because we both have dogs who are able to do things. And so it's, and we have two sets of litter mates, which is, I don't recommend ever to a couple to get, but we have the two, Whit and Lou, who are litter mates, and then our young ones are litter mates as well. And so there's a lot of pressure to keep up with. And like, you know, if one of us is being lazy, the other one is then like peer pressured into training and joining in. And so we just are able to grow quickly that way. But yeah, we did have our best by far. I mean, Whit placed fourth this year, and which I was shocked by in finals. And even more shocking was my puppy was second in the in individual jumping, which was probably, that goes up to like one of the top three moments in my career, that run was, even though that course was not my favorite course, but I still was very proud of her. I was so proud of my freaking amazing dog for doing it. It was like, it was one of the best moments of at least recent agility. But yeah, and then just with my puppy's mother, of course, two dogs after me. I had my moment of glory. Oh my God, she's sitting in first. And now she's in second because Jess and her mom came in and took it from us. But that was super cool. But yeah, I think it's we get to compete on those courses now. And for me and Jess in particular, we're competing against someone who's at our level all the time. Yeah. And even in training, we're not competing against each other, but we're still like, okay, what are you doing? What can your dog do? Okay, I need to make sure my dog can do that too. Or I need to make sure I can do that too. And then kind of growing like that.
Yeah, well, I compete as well, and my wife does. And I know what you're saying with regards. It's like, it's not like you're competing against each other, but equally you are competing against each other. And we always kind of have like a little bet on it, whether it's a takeaway in the night or whatever the case may be. Recently, yeah. I'm not happy to say she beat me. So I'm gunning for her now. So that'll be the next competition that we go into. When you were at the EOs then, is there anyone, any partnerships that you really, and I don't like to say admire, because I know as a competitor, you don't want to be saying admire, but is there any partnerships who you look at and think, oh, that's a really cool, I like enjoy watching them?
There's so many. I feel like it's hard to name names. I feel like Lucy, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but Lucy from the Czech Republic. Yeah. I've seen her a lot because we've competed, like we competed at last year at WAO, we were on the podium together. And then this year in, what was it? The biathlon, she was 2 and 3 with her two dogs and then Whit was 4th. And so I feel like I've been kind of around her and seeing her teamwork with her dog. So I think she's someone who I've been watching and admiring, especially the consistency between the two dogs, yeah. Her young one and the older one. So that's who comes to mind, I would say, first. I think all, I don't know, there's the, all you guys in the UK, I love your dogs. I feel like your dogs are very, I don't even know, that's such a broad statement to say, but I feel like I admire the athleticism of the dogs and the precision of training that I see, like the details of following criteria and making, and in a fair way, making sure the dogs are doing what they've been trained. I see that a lot from people from the UK and I admire that a lot. Jess and I always say we aspire to be like the German women, because we are not tall men that can run super fast. Not, we're athletic women, but we're not, you know, we can't outrun our dogs. And so we see a lot of good handling, but not a crazy running from a lot of the German women. I don't, like, I could name names, but so that is another kind of style that we try to emulate. Yeah. So good training, good handling, but not necessarily letting it be all about who, like, being able to outrun the dogs, because we can't.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So. I think, and that's a good point as well. Like, everyone's got different styles, and it's about working to your strengths, and you'll find some people that kind of
you feel you can emulate.
Yeah, emulate. That's good. Yeah, yeah. You have some people who you feel more close to. Yeah. With regards to future goals, then, what would you say your future goals are?
Oh God, I hate having like goals that are concrete. Like, oh, I want to win the world championship, or oh, I want to win the EO. Of course, I want those things, but I don't. I really don't think it's good for my psyche, or maybe anyone's, but I don't know, this is really speaking for me, to have a goal like that, because it's really not something that is necessarily attainable just because I worked hard enough. I think it's, you know, in all sports, it requires a little bit of luck, a little bit of, you know, the right circumstance on that day. So I think the things that my goals are to get the most out of my dogs. I think being able to read them and give them what they need. I think, like, with my young one, she's a little bit mentally complicated and a little bit, she's a dog who I feel like could have been not squashed where she would go slow, but could have been easily upset. And I feel like my goal right now, my biggest goal, is to kind of just get out of her what as much as I can. And I think there's so much in there. And whatever that ends up being, like, oh, maybe she could win the EO, maybe she could win the world championship. I think so many people could do that. And all I want is for me to help her to shine as much as she can. And whatever that ends up being, I want us to do our best. And wherever those results fall, I don't really care. But I think that is kind of what I feel like my goals are. I mean, with Whit as well, I think he's he has more to give, and I feel like I've worked really hard to figure out how to work with him. And that was actually really hard for me from a mental perspective, because he was not what I was expecting because he's the son of my dog Verb. And so I think, I guess, a long story short, my goals are to do as best as I can with the dogs that I have, and wherever that ends up being, that's as best as I can do. And I just enjoy the process of figuring them out and helping them to be as best as I can be.
Yeah, that's cool. So for all of those people then who are aspiring to compete at the international level, I know that you said at the start that you kind of come into this as a dog trainer primarily, and then you're a competitor after the fact. So what is the biggest mistake you see? And let's talk about in America, because obviously that's where your client base is for your teaching, again, for the most part. So what is the biggest mistake that you see people making in training that would help them if they wanted to try to get to a higher level?
Let's see. The biggest mistake I would say is not, this is a very broad thing, but not understanding what's hard for a dog and getting upset with their dog, whether that's outwardly saying, no, you're a bad dog, or just being disappointed. I think that's the biggest mistake people make, not being fair and not being clear and not understanding ultimately what it is. And that is what makes in my opinion, that is what makes dogs unable to reach their potential, is a person not being fair. So I think it's hard because people don't always know. Like, I had a student recently be like, the dog wasn't able to do a rear cross. And she's like, well, this is disappointing. He can't do a simple rear cross. And I was like, well, no, this is not a simple rear cross. This is a very, very hard one coming from a weird angle and a super tight, like, it was like, and she was really disappointed in the dog. And I explained to her, like, you don't need to be disappointed. It's a young dog. This is not just a rear cross, and no rear crosses, not all rear crosses are the same. And ultimately, none of them are the same. They're all different in some way. But I think people, like, in those situations, not understanding and then being disappointed in the dog is the biggest mistake they can make. I think everybody should err on the side of the dog is trying their best, and if they're not doing it right, it's because they don't understand. Or because they have been allowed to make guesses and they don't know that it's their job to not guess. And I think that's probably the biggest mistake I see, is not understanding what's hard and then ultimately not being clear.
Yeah, and it's like you said as well, that is the type of thing that can squash a dog's confidence if they're consistently told they're getting it wrong. They're basically either going to not play anymore, or they're going to go really, really slow to try to get it right. And people then complain about having a dog with no drive. But it's because they've taken it away. They've taken that will to, they've taken away the fact that the dog is happy to get it wrong. It's a really, really good point. Let's look at a few things outside of agility now then. And what do you, and I suppose, like, they could still be within agility, but not specific to it. But what do you think that people misunderstand about you the most?
That is a good question. I think, I don't know. I don't want to say this out loud. People probably misunderstand that at trials when I'm competing, I'm there to compete with my dogs, and I don't always want to play wear the coach hat or the teacher hat. And I think I am very bad at making that obvious. So I think I draw people to come to me, and it's not always true. So I'm probably just inconsistent with it, but I think I do like to go. I think competing with my dogs is still my hobby. I don't do that professionally. I mean, I ultimately do, but I don't want to. I want to think of that as a game I'm playing and something I'm doing for fun. And I think sometimes if the teaching side bleeds into it, that can make it less fun for me. So that's maybe one thing that people don't understand, or maybe they do understand that.
But maybe you need one of those, I don't know. It's a good question. You need one of those leads that says, give me space on those times that you don't.
Yeah, I think so.
Up to this point then, what do you think you're most proud of?
In agility, or
you can do both, or either.
What am I most proud of? I think my, what am I most proud of? I think it's weird. It probably each dog has something I'm most proud of.
Yeah, yeah.
I think for Wit, I guess right now I'm most proud of Wit because he finished fourth at EO. He won those two gold medals at WAO last year, which was unreal. I couldn't believe that happened. So that was huge too. I feel almost more proud of him for getting fourth at EO this year with his time super close to the winner, and then ultimately to third as well. But I think that's probably what I should say. And I think what I'm really most proud of is my puppy for getting second on that individual jumpers run.
Yeah,
yeah. I know those are all like recent things. Yeah, that's true.
And then on the opposite side of things, then, what to this point do you see as your biggest failure? And then what did you learn from that?
I don't know. I guess if you think of it from like an agility perspective, then there's probably things. And if you think of it from like a life perspective or like an overall kind of like, what's my biggest failure? I think probably my biggest failure is not being as supportive as I should have been of Jess when she made the world team last year, because I wanted it. I don't even like to say I wanted it, but I did. I wanted it too badly. And I don't think I ultimately failed. This is last year because of wanting it too badly. I think it was just circumstance. I just didn't know that on that day I didn't hit it, but I was so upset by that I couldn't support her the way that she needed to be. So I think that was probably my biggest failure as in agility as a whole. I did get over it, but it took me longer than I would like to admit.
To be able to admit that in the first place, to be honest. I mean, it definitely affects all of us. You know, if you have a specific aim, and obviously at that particular time your aim was to get on the team, it's hard not to feel upset, even if someone of your friends is not upset, because you can't help how you feel.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think it's quite big of you to be able to firstly acknowledge that, and then, you know, the fact that you are able to acknowledge that is, fair play, not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
So let's just say now we're in a scenario and I've got a crystal ball, and I'm saying that you can find one thing out about your future. First of all, would you use it? And then if you would, where would you look?
I think I wouldn't use it. I think, I mean, maybe one thing out about my future, I don't know. I think I would not want to know. I think I'm too anxious of a person to need to, I think I need to just live in the moment and work on that, because I think I'm already too worried about the future to find out one thing. Then I'd be like, okay, well, this one thing, and then what about all these other things?
Yeah,
and
you just start
again, what's going to happen after
one thing then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go into the quick fire round. These ones don't need too much background. It's just a case of quick answers. Let people find out a little bit more about you. So what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a beef jerky stick, a chomp.
And what is the last thing that you Googled?
I think the last thing I Googled was name ideas for my puppy that I'm going to be getting soon.
Ooh, do we ask about that puppy or is it a secret?
That's not a secret. It's a border pup out of my dog Jenny's sister.
Cool.
So I'm super excited about it, yeah.
I got a young border pup as well from Jinsey Lacroix. So you welcome to the gang.
Thanks.
When did you last sing and what song was it?
When did I last sing? I feel like I sang today, but I don't remember what song it was. Oh, I think the last thing I sang was this silly, it's actually a song from a baby sing-along tape. It's called Walking. And I made a video of we've only bred two litters of puppies, but one of the litters we bred, I made a little music video to the puppies when they were learning how to walk with that song.
Yeah.
And then my friend who bred the litter that I'm getting from, she did the same thing. So it's a little video of them in the drunken sailor phase toddling along to this kid's song, but that's probably the last thing I sang.
did you ever play any musical instruments?
I did. I played so many instruments so crappily. I played piano and guitar and saxophone and violin and clarinet for a minute too. But I never got too into any of them, but I dabbled in my younger days.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I don't know. I think no.
Any tattoos?
Nope.
What superpower would you have if you could pick one?
I think I'd want to. I want to say I want to be able to read people's thoughts, but I might regret that.
I don't know if I'd go for that one. I think that's a dangerous one to go for.
Maybe if I could just turn it off and on. I wouldn't want it to be constant, but if I could say, all right, right now I really want to know, and then I could turn it off. That would be probably good.
Okay, so I just said that you could have a superpower, and at this stage in the show, it's the last question that we do, and I have a superpower. My superpower is I have Dr. Doolittle type vibes, and I can get you to understand in a conversation with your dogs. So if I gave you the power to talk to your dogs and have a conversation for like 10, 20 seconds, what would you tell them?
I tell them that I love them and that they're the best dogs I've ever known, and I hope that they live forever.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty much what everyone says. I mean, it's a good, you know, yeah. I think it's, I say it all the time. I think it's the one thing that we all want to know is that you try your best to make them happy. So if you can, you want to find out if they are or not. I mean, I'm sure they would all take a little bit more food or whatever, but for the most part, you know.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Perry. Before we go, is there anything that you want to make people aware of? If you just want to plug anything?
I think I'll say trust yourselves and trust your dogs. If you're not happy, if you're not comfortable, find a place that you can be happy and comfortable. And I think ultimately that will make your dog happy and comfortable as well. So don't ever feel stuck. There's other options out there if you are not having fun, because agility is super fun and it should always be fun. And if you're not having fun, then know that there are places that you can go to change that.
That's awesome. Yeah. Again, thank you so much for your time, Perry. And if you want to say goodbye to everyone.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Thanks, guys. And that is the end of the podcast. Thank you for taking some time out of your day to listen. I really hope you enjoyed. If you think you might know someone else who would enjoy, feel free to pass on all the information and share the podcast with them. And get involved on any of the social media platforms. It really helps the podcast grow, and I really appreciate it. See you in the next one.